Welcome to My Millennial Money. You're with John Pidgeon. No Glenn James today, so it's going to be the funniest episode. We are loose and we can do whatever we want because Glenn's not in the house and I've just raided his office and we're ready to roll. We have Josh Nicholson here today and I'm doing a live clarity call with Josh all the way from Bris Vegas, should I say. Welcome, Josh.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, thank you. Now, this has come about because of obviously what's going on in the world today with COVID-19, etc. Josh, amongst many others, have experienced a little bit of trepidation, fear, whatever you want to call it. Josh is about to pull the trigger on a property purchase in Brisbane to live in, and he's 9/10 of the way down the track. And he's saying, what the hell am I doing? Is it going to be the best decision for me? So we're going to have a chat to Josh and it'll go for about half an hour being a free call. That's all I'm worth today. So we'll kick it off and hope for the listeners that you get something out of it that you can take forward for your own situation. So here it is. All right, Josh. So fire away. What's your fears?
Well, I guess we're about to purchase our first home, and this has been in the works for about 6 months ago. I think we put our signature down on the contract, and we were buying off the plan, so it was kind of an unknown as to when we were going to move in. And a few weeks ago, they gave us the notice that the house was ready, and we're in our settlement period, waiting for the 9th of April. I think our settlement's on. And then in the midst of that, all the COVID stuff started happening. So I'm kind of freaking out a little bit as to what's going to happen in the world. You know, whether or not we keep jobs is a big concern of ours. We've also gone into this property purchase with LMI, so we only have a small deposit, which is a bit of a concern. I don't know if that is going to impact us. Obviously, having a smaller deposit and having to borrow more means that our repayments are a little bit higher than if we saved a full 20% deposit. And then just looking at uncertain economic times, it's a little bit daunting. So
I can understand why you're probably losing a little bit of sleep at the moment. I'm a big fan of controlling the controllables, so I want to talk to you about those first if I can. Mm-hmm. And just maybe get some facts and figures as to what we're up against come the 9th of April. So 95% loan-to-value ratio, you've taken advantage of the first homeowner's grant. Yep. Is the townhouse new or is it an existing?
It's brand new off the plan.
Brand new. So that means you've got being in Queensland, you've got a rebate amount that comes back to you. 15 grand, is it?
Yep.
15 grand comes into your kitty. So what's your deposit funds that you're actually up for? Tell me the numbers there.
So we've put in, I think, at 29.5 so far. I should have had my spreadsheet in front of me. But yeah, I think it's about 30 grand that we've tipped in so far. And then looking at, we're borrowing 560, which includes the LMI.
Okay, so the LMI is capitalized into your loan and that totals 560. And what was your purchase price?
$590,000
is purchase price. So you're under that ceiling of first homeowners of $600,000 in Queensland.
I think it's 700.
Give or take anyway. So you've got a loan of 560. The purchase price is 590. So you're reasonably some would say highly geared in that respect.
Yeah. And we went into it knowing that as well. I guess 6 months ago, we've got pretty good earnings and pretty good, we've been putting away about $3,000 a month to save for the house, but we haven't obviously been doing it for that long, which is why we don't have a huge deposit. And the thought of going, the reason that we went to buy the house at that time was because we've got a young son. He's almost two. And eventually we want to expand the family as well, but we wanted to be in our home before we did that, which is why we made the choice to purchase the home at this time rather than saving a deposit and trying to raise another little baby.
Cool. All right. Yeah. So my first bit of advice there is sleep in separate beds. We don't want another child coming in the next 12 months. All right.
Sure.
All right. So you've got one on the ground and you've got a pre-approval. You're ready to settle on the 9th of April.
Yeah.
What's the total funds you need to come up with? Is it the 29,500 or do you still need to tip in more?
No. So that's already paid.
Yep.
I think, and then we've got the first homeowners grant that comes into play as well, which Sean's organised for us. And then it'll just be the stamp duty that we've got to pay for.
Sure.
And then the legal fees and transfers and things. So that, I think I worked it out, maybe about 18 to 20 grand that we've still got to tip in.
Okay. And you've got that sitting there, have you?
Yeah. Yep, we've got that there.
Okay. All right. So... by Sean, you mean Sean from Wellman Finance?
That's the man, yep.
Okay, great. So coincidentally, I've just had a chat to him this morning around the latest lending conditions and because they're getting updated daily as everyone is at the moment. So yep. I can give you a little bit of data around that at the present as well. So when you look at your buffers, what would that amount be after you've given all your money you need to get this property purchased?
So our emergency savings isn't as high as what we'd want it to be. I think we should have about $8,000 left in the coffers. And current expenses is about 1.5 months worth.
Yep. Okay. So the cost to exist for you is how much per month?
It's about, well, in good times, we're usually up around the 7.5. But if we really need to pare it back, we can get it down to about $5,000 or $6,000. And okay. I know that we can do that because I went through a redundancy just over 12 months ago. And so there was about 4 or 5 months that we had to really, really pare the finances back. So we've kind of been through that a little bit.
Sure. So my advice there is to definitely pare it back and live off the smell of an oily rag for the next 3 to 6 months.
Yep.
Going ahead with this purchase, of course. So just make sure that $5,000 is $5,000 and not $6,000 or $7,000, because that obviously makes a massive difference for the long term.
Yeah.
So you've told me in your pre-clarity form that you're saving about $3,000 a month.
Yep.
At the moment, you're renting for $470 per week, which equates to $24,440 for the year.
Yep.
Now, I've gone onto my solverwealth.com.au mortgage repayments calculator. It's in the tools section for listeners. And found that your interest rate, you've said, was 3.02%. If you're interest only, it'll be $16,900 per annum.
Yep.
If you're principal and interest, it'll be $28,600 per annum. So when we look at the rent you're paying right now, it's somewhere in the middle of paying interest only versus principal and interest on your new pending purchase.
Yep.
Okay. So the actual living expenses won't change dramatically from going from renting to living in your new home with that $560,000 mortgage.
Correct. Yeah.
So question, your loan going forward from the 9th of April, is that interest only or P&I?
P&I.
It's P&I. Okay.
Yep.
So we need to come up with the best part of $1,100 per fortnight to service that P&I loan,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, if we minus that from the $940 that we're paying in rent, there's about $160 extra that we need to cover per fortnight to service our roof or mm-hmm. basically living. Yeah. On top of that, we'll have our rates and our insurances. So just factor those numbers in and just make sure you've got a sure amount on both of those.
Yep.
So if we're saving $3,000 a month, which you've told me you are, even if that $3,000 a month comes back to $2,000 a month and you're giving yourself an extra grand to play with in respect to rates, extra repayments, increasing your buffer amounts,
yep.
you're still $24,000 a year in your savings at the present time. Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yep.
So, well, I'm just going on the numbers you've given me pre this call. So I think from a funding point of view, you should be fine. There's buffers in place, although they're not 3 months worth now. You've got the ability to build that up pretty quickly. Yep. Your repayments are not going to be much higher than what rent you're currently paying now, which is a big win. Interest rates, in my mind, are not going anywhere in the next 12 months to maybe 2 years. So I think you've got that on your favour. Okay. Fixed rates at the moment are just absurd. All banks are wanting to fix you in to get some certainty for their bottom line. Mm-hmm. Like ANZ, for example, last week said 2.3% for 2 years fixed. Like that's just out of control. So would you go and fix straight away? I would say no, but you've got the option to do it down the track if you need to.
Mm.
Right. So again, controlling the controllables, we need to know what's happening in our life, which we've just covered off on.
Yep.
The second part is, well, what's my plan B, plan C? My plan B is maybe fix some rates, because we're probably going to get a lower rate if we were going to do that, as opposed to keeping it variable. And plan C is move back home and rent it out. Is an option to move back home absolute worst case?
No, there's not. Mum and Dad are in the process of moving to New Zealand, so it's a little difficult.
Okay, so you can't move there. We can't get into New Zealand at the moment anyway, can you? So plan C is out the window. So knowing your variables there, but increasing your buffer amounts is really critical in this time.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about your occupation, or I suppose your industry, in these uncertain times. Tell me what you're doing for work.
So I'm a project scheduler. I work for, so we're a dealership.
Okay.
So machinery, mainly mining machinery, but lots of construction industry stuff too.
Okay, cool. So when we look at an industry like that, a lot of those companies are very well funded, aren't they? Forward when they're renting to mining companies. It's almost a cash cow. So does that mean that your job's secure? Well, it's probably secure than those in the hospitality industry or tourism at the moment.
Yeah.
So I think one thing you can do around that is having a conversation with your company and saying, look, uncertain times, got a mortgage, got a child. What's the next 6 months look like? With the knowledge that you've got right now. And I think having that transparent conversation maybe puts you at ease, but also alarms you if they're saying, well, we're not too sure, we've got these sort of issues as a fallout from COVID, etc.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would be definitely having that conversation. As a plan B in respect to the work that you do, what is another industry or something that you can go into and earn similar money? Have you got anything up your sleeve there that you've done previous?
I haven't actually thought of that, to be honest. I guess previously I was doing project controls in for a railway company. And then that sort of covers off the last 10 years, just those two roles. So prior to that was sort of sales jobs and things. But yeah, we're talking a decade ago now.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So look, I think from an industry perspective, you're in a pretty stable one in terms of the health epidemic that we've got.
Mm-hmm.
Having that conversation is critical. Yeah. Nadine, your wife, she's on full-time income at the moment as well.
Yeah. So she works full time. So she's in agriculture.
Okay.
So she's in the HR team for them.
Okay. And when you say agriculture, what are we talking?
Oh, beef.
Okay.
Yeah. All Australian right. Agricultural Company, AACo. So they do sort of more high end, like Wagyu and premium cuts of beef.
Sure. Okay. So again, probably an industry that is governed more by how much it rains and the cost of cattle and all those sort of things, which is probably not that related or doesn't have the fallout from something like a health issue right now, does it? But I'd definitely be having a conversation or getting her to have the conversation with her boss or employer, yeah. Absolutely. Because it looks as though, from an income perspective, you're about 50-50 with your contributions to the total household income. Is that right? You're on about 100, she's on about 97?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, so yeah, we're pretty close. So, which does give us a bit of, I guess, a bit of comfort. If one of us loses our job, we're not, we're not losing a 60% or 70%. We're only losing half. But
that's right.
Which does give some comfort, but it's still uncertain times.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go there for a moment. So if one of you did lose your job, it really doesn't matter which one.
Yeah.
If you both lose it, then obviously that's a different conversation. But if one of you lost, what's the net income coming in from the other versus our cost to exist? Have you done that breakdown?
So we'd need to supplement it a little bit. So we're probably, I guess, after take home income and things, we'd probably need maybe another $1,000 or $1,500 a month to cover those living costs.
Sure. Okay. So again, I would just make sure that we've got a reasonably certain figure on that to know what is the shortfall and just understand that amount in your own mind to say, well, if I have to go and stock shelves or pump petrol or whatever it is, that this is the amount we need to continue through.
Yep.
Because I think, and it's very easy to say, but in these uncertain times, people act with emotion and act out of fear.
Yep.
Without actually having some knowledge around their own situation to begin with, they're looking at the media and it's all doom and gloom, etc. So the first part of it is getting the knowledge around your own situation, and if you've got that knowledge and saying, well, actually, we're going to be in a bit of trouble here because of the industry we're in or the running costs of our life if we lose our job, it may be saying, no, we're not going to push through with this purchase.
Mm-hmm.
We pull out and reassess in 6 months or 12 months' time. I don't think, however, we would pull out because, oh, we can get a better deal in 6 months' time because the market's going to drop 20%. It's more about making a decision around your own situation and can we afford it? Is it putting too much risk in our lives right now?
Yeah.
No one knows what the overall property market are going to do over the next 12 months, 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I can assure you one thing is that the dips that they fall to, if we're not selling, they're going to continue to rise back up above what they are right now over the long term. So people that are having to sell in these downtimes, yes, they're going to be affected. The key is to make sure that you don't have to sell through these times so that you're not sitting here in 6 months' time having transacted on this property. Now we have to sell because we didn't get our numbers right.
Mm, yeah.
Makes sense?
Yeah, so it's all about sort of safeguarding and understanding what we need to, I guess, maintain it so that we don't have to go into that situation.
Yeah, that's right. And like, obviously, the government's saying, well, or banks are saying you can freeze your mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
That's all well and good, but that's going to be capitalised and added to your loan overall. So that's a worst case in my scenario. You just don't go and jump and do that just because it's gives you some relief. I think it's a worst case scenario that you would go and do that. But you know you've got things like that up your sleeve in the coming months. But I wouldn't go in with the basis of saying, oh, well, if we can't afford it, we'll just freeze our mortgage sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you said, can we have a sensible strategy if something goes really wrong, i.e. one of us loses a job? So I suppose that's what I'm referring to there is if one does lose a job, what's our shortfall that we need to make up? And are we employable somewhere else because we're a good person and we're relatable and we've got a good work ethic and those sort of things?
Yeah, okay.
The buffers, again, I would have thought that in the next 2 to 3 months we'll know whether we're keeping our job or not. I don't think in 12 months' time someone will lose their job because of COVID. I think it'll be more the next 3 to 6 months that'll happen. So yep. That's where that conversation with your employer, them knowing their bottom line, knowing what sort of staff issues they've got, the cost to exist if things aren't running the way they wanted it to.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'd be surprised if either industries are massively affected to the point where they're pulling down full-time staff like yourselves. But yeah, as I said, I'm not in your lives to understand that. So you just need to have that conversation, both yourself and Nadine, with your employer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You've said point C, we don't know what we don't know, and we're facing a global pandemic.
Yep.
Absolutely. And I'm not Nostradamus either, so I don't know how bad that's going to be. And I'm not saying I'm not worried about it, but I've got no control over it personally, and neither have you.
Mm-hmm.
So to waste some brain matter on keeping us awake at night because of it, it's not doing us any good.
Yeah.
It's more about spending the energy on what we can control, as I said at the start of the conversation. So, yeah, I do know that every downturn that I've been experienced in and the ones before me, it recovered, and it recovered about the same time that it took to downturn. So if it took 12 months to dip down, it usually takes around 12 months to come back out. Now, this one's been sharp, really sharp. So hopefully that's an indication that it'll recover just as quickly. But we haven't got that crystal ball. We'd like to think that in 2 years, 3 years' time, it's well forgotten about and it's been minimal impact. But we won't know that for some time, will we?
Yeah.
Any questions, observations at the minute?
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of stuff going along in the media about all the financial measures that the government are putting in place too, and I know you guys have put out podcasts. I haven't had a chance to listen to them yet about, you know, the potential to take money out of super and things like that if things go wrong.
Yep.
So I guess I haven't really had time to sit down and understand what that means, if that's an option worth exploring if we did lose a job or and we couldn't gain employment somewhere else, we had to supplement income. Is that something worthwhile looking at?
I think it's worthwhile understanding what it means and the process you'd go through to do it. But again, I definitely think it's a worst case scenario, just like freezing your mortgages.
Yeah.
So if you've got some buffers in your life that carry through the next 2 months, then you can work some part-time job if you lose yours or you just basically do anything to get through, I would much rather be doing that than to A, freeze my mortgage and B, access my super. But you know, as a backup, you know the process to go through if you needed to pull the trigger on either of those plans, I suppose. Yeah. So that's the way I would be approaching it. But yeah, definitely get yourself clued up on what it would take to access either of those plans.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Anything else that we need to cover off on that I haven't spoken about?
Probably my, just having a look through.
One thing that again, Sean did allude me to this morning was, a lot of lenders now with their pre-approvals, what they're doing before they give that full-on formal approval is anywhere from 14 to 10 days out from giving that formal, they're asking the question, are we still in employment? So give me your payslips and maybe in some cases talk to the boss to make sure that this person is in employment. So. Yep. For you, we're 10 days out today, aren't we? So I would be thinking that your lender would be asking the question of Sean or maybe even ringing your employer if they're diligent enough. So it probably won't affect you right now because you are still in employment, but being aware that that's what lenders are doing, having a pre-approval doesn't mean that it's over the line, all sorted, no more checks. Obviously, evaluation needs to occur. Employment checks, pay slips need to be readily available. So just have them up your sleeve in preparation if need be.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, that raises a good point, because I guess that's one of the fears. I mean, right now, status quo, I'm not expecting anything to happen with work. But I mean, as we've seen in the last 2 weeks, you know, people being put out of jobs, you know, the next day when they thought they were okay. Yes. So I guess what position does that put us in if one of us did lose our job, say, this week, and then the banks the banks do a check and they're like, okay, we're not going to lend you money now, and now I'm liable to settle on this house. It puts me in.
Yeah, so let's talk briefly about that contract. So you've signed a contract to buy this brand new townhouse. When did you sign that, Josh?
October.
October last year.
Yep.
And there was an unconditional settlement period, which has now obviously expired, has it?
Yep.
Yeah. So basically, absolute worst case scenario, the owner, developer, whoever it is, can say, well, Josh can't settle on this property because he can't get finance. We'll keep his deposit and move on and sell it to someone else, right? Mm. Which obviously sounds quite frightening, but that's the facts of buying something or committing to something without having that formal finance.
Yeah.
In most cases where you're buying existing, you would want to put in a finance clause where if you can't get finance, you've got the ability to pull back out with no or little impact. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's a little bit different because of an off-the-plan purchase back from October, and now we're sitting in March. Now, back in October, as you mentioned in your form, you didn't expect something like this, and no one did.
Yeah.
However, I would be thinking on the other side of the coin that the developer is also in the same position where he would want these things sold. So he's going to do, I would think, or she, the best that they can to get you across the line. Now, whether that's giving you more time, whether it's looking at different lenders, I don't know. But that's, I suppose, having that conversation, A, with Sean at Wellman Finance, but also B, with the developer if that that time comes, but hopefully it won't.
Yeah, no, that's understandable. It's just, I guess, a concern, but it's worrying about something that hasn't happened at the same time as well.
That's right, yeah, and that's, I suppose, what I keep coming back to is it hasn't happened.
It's not controllable.
In a lot of ways, it's out of our control.
Yeah.
So let's not. We know that, and I like to think, well, I prepare for the worst, but expect the best.
Yep.
So if we run by that motto, we've already prepared for it in our mind, but we're expecting that we're going to get a fantastic result.
Yeah.
So, yeah, come the 9th of April, it's all smooth sailing. We move into our new home with our family. We manage our expenses. We don't lose our job. We keep tight with our buffers. We keep tight with our discretional spending, and then hopefully live happily ever after, Josh.
Yeah, fingers crossed, yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool. Is there anything else that you wanted to cover off on before we finish?
No, I don't think so, mate. I think you've given me a few things to go away and think about, and definitely need to do some calculations to, I guess, understand the position a bit better and tighten things up. But, like you said, just trying to look at controlling what we can. And it's just, I guess, it's hard to not freak out about the things that haven't happened yet.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And it's very easy for me to come into your life for half an hour with no emotion and give you the raw facts. But, I mean, that's the beauty of it is you get to talk to someone external that can look at it black and white. And, mm-hmm. and I'm just saying, look, shore those numbers up. When you're saying you can live on $5,000 or $6,000, like that's a grand difference. So make sure it's five and not six is what I'm alluding to there.
Yep.
Because that grand might be the grand that gets you out of trouble in 2 months' time.
That's true.
I think it's those that haven't prepared and got the foundations are the ones that fall over in these sort of times.
Yep. Okay.
But yeah, hopefully you're sending me a message on April 10 saying, John, I've got it. We're in. We're all good to go.
I bloody hope so.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, Josh, we'll appreciate you sharing your life with me and obviously the listeners as well now today. So,
Welcome.
If there's anything else, don't hesitate to shout out.
Awesome. All right, thank you very much for your time, John. Really appreciate it.
No worries, mate.
All right.
No worries, and good luck.
Thanks, mate. You too.
If you're after personal financial advice, this podcast is not for you. But if you do want a financial advisor or mortgage broker to talk with about your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click Get Help, and we'll put you in touch with one of our trusted professionals. If you're looking for a super fund that puts its members' interests above all else, choose a super performer, Sun Super. With low fees, strong investment returns, and great member services, Sun Super is Super Ratings 2020 Fund of the Year and has also been awarded by Money Magazine, Canstar, and Finder. Find out more about Sun Super at sunsuper.com.au/choose. You can join Sun Super online in under 5 minutes. Many people do not realise that slavery still exists in the world today. That's why My Millennial Money supports A21. We want to highlight A21 as they work to abolish slavery and human trafficking all across the world. If you want to support A21, visit a21.org.au for more information. If you're listening to this podcast, there's a high chance you have disposable income. Glenn has a mandate to get everyone giving, saving, and spending in that order. Now, we want to encourage you to be generous with your money, but choosing an effective charity can be difficult. An amazing resource you can use is thelifeyoucansave.org.au. You can donate to them and they'll distribute your donation to a variety of life-saving and life-changing charities around the world with a focus on eliminating extreme poverty. For more information, visit thelifeyoucansave.org.au. Thanks to Jess Knaus, executive producer, Laura from La La Social Club, and me, Asha. Anyway, make sure you stay connected via our Instagram, our free Facebook group, or if you want to turn it up a notch and be on the inside of the show, become a member of M3 Private. For further information about what's going on, check out the links in the show notes.